We'll listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers, the oldies, the 50s and 60s.
In the history of pop music, a list of recordings that have become big hits over the years is a mix of the predictable and the unpredictable. In the latter category came this one from 1968, most assuredly an unexpected national top 10 hit by a group of Irish singer-musicians from Canada. A children's song, no less, and 47 years later, it can still be heard regularly in Irish pubs throughout the world.
A long time ago when the earth was green, and there was more kinds of animals than you've ever seen. They'd run around free when the earth was being born, but the loveliest of them all was the unicorn.
That was a little bit of the unicorn. Now, was the existence of the unicorn simply a myth? Not according to this song. The unicorn was simply a creature who sadly and literally missed the boat by not boarding Noah's Ark in time to be saved from the great flood described in the Bible. I'm Ronnie Allen, and on today's show, we're going to hear that entire record and the story behind it, and also the story behind the group who recorded it, and also several of their other very popular recordings. My guest is the founding member and primary lead singer of that group, who was with them for somewhere around 30 years. That group is the Irish Rovers. And now, I am delighted to welcome, with a hearty drum roll, Will Miller.
Well, as they say in Hollywood, top of the morning to you, Ronnie.
I love it. I have been looking forward to this for a long time. I have loved your music. And how could you not love the music by the Irish Rovers?
What smart people you are.
I know.
You know, I've been doing this since I was a child, really, because my father was a button keyed accordion player, and we lived in Northern Ireland before we all emigrated to Canada.
Right.
But since I was 10 years old, I remember when my mother would send me next door to the local pub, and a little interesting trivia, the corner of our street, the pub was owned by a man called Barney Neeson, who was the father of the famous actor now Liam Neeson, who came from Ballymena, the same town as us. And my father, I'm sure we helped put Liam through acting school with all the money my dad spent in that pub. And so whenever I'd go to collect my dad, the boys would say to me, come on there, you boy, you give us a song. So for half a crown or a shilling or whatever it was, I'd get up there on a chair and I'd sing The Wild Colonial Boy or some of those old Irish comolies, and then I would always get a few coins for it. So I said, Jesus, this is a good way to make a few dollars. I think I was hooked early. I remember at 10 years old, my mother, who was a real stage mother in her own way, she put my sister and me together, even though I didn't want to do it, to go into a talent contest in the north of Ireland at Portrush. And my sister and I won the talent contest, and we were called the Miller Kids. And from that, my first ever tour, I was 10, and my sister was 7, and we were put on a train. I don't know how my mother allowed us to do it. It must have been different times in those days. We were put on a train in our town of Ballymena, and we were sent off to Dublin to go and join a vaudeville kind of show. And we were the children's act on there, known as the Miller Kids. And we traveled all over Ireland when I was 10. So I've been doing this a lot of years, Ronnie. This is part of my life, I suppose.
I have to say, Will, you answered about my first 10 questions there. That was fabulous. I love it.
Well, that's really where it began for me as a performer. And later on, my dad would join us on stage with his button-keyed accordion. My sister would do a little step dance, early river dance. And then later on, my brother George, who is 9 years younger than me, as a little kid, he played a pair of spoons. So he would come on stage and rattle the spoons along with us as well. So we were kind of a musical family all around the countryside, and we were known.
Impressive.
Recently, I found old ads for variety concerts in our town in the microfiles in my library in Ballymena, and didn't I find an old theater bill announcing grand variety concert featuring, and there we were on the name, the Miller Kids.
Wow. And I want to point out, some people may get confused when they see the spelling of your name is M-I-L-L-A-R, and I would assume it gets mispronounced at times. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, and I don't really care what they can call me, anything. What is it the man said? Call me what you want to, but just don't call me early in the morning.
And also, don't call me late for dinner. How did the Irish Rovers come to be?
I had left Toronto to head west to Calgary. My brother, George, is 9 years younger than me. He was only 13 years old, and when I got to Calgary, as fate would have it, I ended up with a television show 5 days a week for children in Calgary.
Wow.
And also, in a desperation mode, having no money, I managed to wangle a job singing around tables in a pancake house. Of all things, going from table to table, and that was tied in with the television show. And before I knew it, everybody in Calgary, Alberta knew Will Miller. And my brother in Toronto, with my father and sister, were playing folk music, Irish songs, that I would send cassettes, not cassettes in those days, reel-to-reel tapes,
because
they didn't have any source for the music. But I've always been a collector of Irish songs and Irish music. I have a huge collection. I would send them down songs on reel-to-reel tapes, and they would learn them. And they formed a kind of a hobby band when he was like 13 years old. And then he found a friend, Jimmy Ferguson, and with my dad and my sister and a couple of other Irish guys, they would play in a couple of little local folk clubs. And I can remember the very, very first time that my mother was saying, your brother's forming a little group and they're looking for a name. So the Irish Rover came up at that time, and I guess my mother passed it on to George.
And that name was inspired by a popular Irish folk song called The Irish Rover.
And so I was out in Calgary, Alberta with two Irish guys,
right,
singing under the name of the Irish Rovers. And then one summer, my brother George decided that he'd love to have an adventure too. So him and Jimmy decided to come and visit their brother Will, who seemed to have a TV show. I even had a car. I had an old Jaguar. And they didn't have 1 cent to their name. My brother nowadays goes around saying that he had the Irish Rovers professionally working in Toronto for 2 years. Well, he came to me at 15, which must mean that he started the band at 13, so that's a lot of baloney, that is. But he came out to me for what was going to be a 2-week holiday, but they liked my life so well with the television show and my old Jaguar car and endless parties. We were near the hospital, and we always had lots of nurses at the parties, and so they said, we're not going back. Jimmy was working in a factory in Toronto, and my brother was going to school. So I phoned my mother and I said, look, George doesn't want to go back. And she said, well, if you put him in school, you can look after him there. So I had to go and beg the local headmaster at the school to get him into school. I even bought him books. Of course, that lasted for about 3 weeks. Then he never went to school because of the parties we were having at night. And so when I said, you know what, I'm fed up with Calgary, my big mecca was always California, San Francisco, the Hungry Eye, and the Purple Onion. Those were mecca to me. If we want to make it at all, the Irish Rovers really were born in Calgary, Alberta. We had a folk club there called the Depression, and we became the mainstay of that club.
Wait a minute, the name of the club was the Depression Club?
It was called the Depression Club.
Oh, God. Did Joni Mitchell have something to do with that at some point?
Well, she didn't have anything to do with it, but she came as a young girl from high school with her ukulele and her plaid skirt,
right,
and she was called Joni Anderson. And she used to come and sing on the Sunday night hootenannies.
Oh, wow.
And she sung things like the Sloop John B. and the With I Was an Apple on a Tree with a lisp. And I think it was after she met and married Chuck Mitchell where she became the great songwriter that she is today. But in those early Calgary days, she was just a young high school girl like the rest of us trying to find our future somewhere along the way. That Depression Club had lots of people drop by. Ian Tyson, some of the American folkies would come up, and Gordon Lightfoot. It was a real hub in Calgary of folk music at the time. One morning we packed up our old Jaguar and we headed down out of south out of Vancouver and down the California coast. And, you know, I could talk and tell you a story that went on for hours, but one thing that is always clear to me, fate has always taken a hand in my life. This is just one of the simple things that happened. The car broke down outside an Italian restaurant on the California coast at a little village called Valley Ford,
wow.
Bodega Bay, where they filmed the birds. The car broke down there outside DiNucci's Italian Dinners, and in the old garage in town, he looked at the Jaguar and he says, I know nothing about that car, I couldn't fix it. And so I left the boy sitting rather glumly in the Jaguar while I hitchhiked to Santa Rosa, which took me half the bloody day because I got a ride from a man who was delivering papers. My job was to stuff the paper in the mailboxes as he went along. It took me about 4 hours to get to Santa Rosa. Anyway, long story short, when I got back with a mechanic who finally drove me back, we found that it was dark. DiNucci's Italian Dinners was all lighted up. Irish music was coming out the door. The boys were in there holding court. They had a red plastic bucket on the pool table. And the farmers and everybody coming in there were filling it up. And here's the magic of it all. DiNucci's Italian Dinners had just been bought the month before by two Irish immigrants who had just come out from Ireland. And when the boys wandered in there with about $5 to their name that afternoon after I left to buy a packet of cigarettes, and all of a sudden, they all discovered each other. So we lived with DiNucci's Italian Dinner for about 2 or 3 weeks, and that's where we got the first audition in San Francisco for the Purple Onion. So that's where it really all started. If it hadn't have been for that car breaking down outside DiNucci's Italian Dinners, we probably would have never met the booking agent who got us into the Purple Onion. I do believe sometimes, Ronnie, that life has pathways lined out for us. Maybe it's only my life. The way that the band progressed and how I found the Unicorn song by getting a job singing around the pancake tables, you know? I was looking for kid songs.
As I read some of this material, it seems that there were actually a couple of Irish Rover bands, but in reality there was only one.
There definitely was only one, and the one that got known was the one that I formed in Calgary, Alberta, and we went down the California coast and got a job at those folk clubs. And that's where the Irish Rovers were born. And of course, if we hadn't got that Decca record contract, the world would never have heard of the Irish Rovers.
And how did you get that contract?
Well, it happened by playing at the Purple Onion. And then we left the Purple Onion, and we got a job playing at the Ice House,
right,
which was a very famous folk club at that time, too. And in the audience, a Decca record rep had come out with his mother, who was Irish. And he came and said, oh, I'm going to send a producer over. And that's when I met Charles Buddan, wonderful man. And one thing always led to the other. I used to keep writing home to my mother in Ireland saying, well, if nothing good happens in the next month, I'm going to leave and come home. I was always the worrier, Ronnie, in the band. The other boys didn't give a damn. They, as long as they had a few dollars in their pockets to buy a pint of Guinness or a packet of cigarettes, they were very happy for the first 4 or 5 years. But here I was fretting and worrying all the time. And I suppose in the end, maybe that's what hurt the Irish Rovers, because the boys thought I was becoming too bossy. And the reason for that was because they're lackadaisical buggers. They didn't want to do anything at the time. And
you needed a boss.
Yeah, you know what? Every little army needs a leader. And I led them for 35 years, and they could say whatever they like. I did all the interviews. I did all the newspaper presses. They hated press. They hated hanging out at the end of the show, even. When there was people wanting to meet us, they would disappear. I would be the one that was delegated to go to the local mayor's house party after the show. I was always the one that had to appear at all these things. And I didn't mind it too much either, because maybe I was a bit more outgoing than the rest.
Awesome.
And it was a great band. It's hard to believe, but when we got with Decca Records, they were connected with MCA.
Right.
And from that, we got parts in the Western series down there, like the Virginian. You know that Steve Martin used to be on stage just before us at the Ice House for weeks and
like
weeks.
Like a warm-up act, basically, for you?
Well, he was his own act. The Ice House always had two performers, and they usually would put the comedian on before the band. Sometimes in the Ice House, we would be there for the last show at 2 o'clock in the morning, and we'd be the only ones in the audience laughing our head off at Steve Martin. We were his audience. So it was great memories. I mean, California was a wonderful time for me. We were all young. We were getting jobs everywhere. Linda Ronstadt lived with us for a while at Hermosa Beach when we had a little house right at the beach. She was with a group at the time called the Stone Ponies, and she was only like about 18 years old, and she stayed with us. We met everybody at those times, a great band called the Dillards, one after the other. Jose Feliciano used to play on the same bill as us at the Golden Bear Club in Long Beach. And I can remember the very first night the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band walked into audition at the Golden Bear, and I said, here's a new band. They had a mandolin and accordion just like the Irish Rovers.
Who were the specific members of the group when you sang The Unicorn? I know there was Will Miller. You were the lead singer on many of the recordings. And you played You played the banjo.
No, on The Unicorn I played guitar. Always lead guitar players because I was just a singer-guitar player. But we always had a good lead guitar player playing with us as well,
Now, you had a gentleman you mentioned by the name of Jimmy Ferguson. Jimmy, I believe, was the only member of the group that did not play an instrument.
For a while, we got an old galvanized washtub and put a broom handle on it with a gut string, and they were known in those days as gut buckets.
Right.
And he hated it. And we were traveling up and down to the Purple Onion because we were staying in Santa Rosa, and we drove every night back home after the show, and we had to stuff that bloody gut bucket into the back of a Volkswagen that we owned in those days. They weren't too happy about it. Jimmy never liked playing an instrument, so shortly, after about 6 months, we said, okay, let's scrap the gut bucket.
And if you watch YouTube videos, generally you're just seeing him singing.
Jimmy was a great, boisterous kind of singer. He was your perpetual Irish pub singer.
Ah.
That big chest and the big belly and a pint in his hand, he could belt out an Irish drinking song as good as anybody I've ever met. Him and me were really the two front guys.
Yes.
Because my brother hardly ever said anything on stage, and my cousin Joe never said anything on stage. So it was mostly Jimmy and me that were up front.
Right. Jimmy, sadly, passed away, I think it was around 1997.
It was around 1997. Well, you know what? He never looked after his health. I think he just drunk a little bit too much whiskey, and he certainly smoked a lot. Yeah. And he loved to eat. He was a real Falstaffian character. Mm-hmm. He didn't really fret too much about life. If he did, he held it all inside. Right. But there was a history of heart disease in his family as well.
Right.
And there was a few times when he didn't come on tour with us. Once he collapsed on a plane, thought he was dead because he got a blood clot in his leg or something. There was times when I thought he'd never make it, and the sad thing about it was he actually died on tour in the room next to my brother, and Jimmy always would meet my brother for breakfast in the morning. The two of them were real comrades, and Jimmy never appeared this morning, and George, they finally had to have the chain cut on the hotel room, and they found him in bed like he was sleeping. It was an easy passing, but at 57, he shouldn't have passed. There was four of us for quite a long time. George, my brother, Jimmy Ferguson, my cousin Joe Miller, and me. That was the original Irish Rover that went on for quite a while until we decided to add more music, and that's when we brought Wilson McDowell.
Those are the four that were core members on The Unicorn.
First two albums, it was only the four of us, actually. When we did those Universal television series, it was just the four of us as well.
The Unicorn was actually written in 1962 by a man who was quite a character himself, Shel Silverstein. He was a cartoonist.
He was a character and a half, and was a brilliant writer in his own vein. As you know, you could probably tell the folks all the hits that he wrote, you know?
The Johnny Cash hit, A Boy Named Sue.
Yeah.
He wrote several for Loretta Lynn, One's on the Way, and a few others. And he did some recordings on his own. In fact, I'm going to play just a little bit of Shel Silverstein's original version of his own composition called The Unicorn.
Hey, Lord, I got you two alligators, a couple of geese. I got you humpback camels and two chimpanzees. I got you cats and rats and elephants. But, Lord, I'm so forlorn, cause I just don't see no unicorn.
Kind of almost shouts it out.
Yeah, he does. He kind of talked the song, and he also wrote cover of Rolling Stone for Dr.
Hook. Yes, that's the one I forgot. Yes, he also wrote Sylvia's Mother for Dr. Hook. That was their first hit prior to that.
That's right.
What a songwriter he was.
He was. And you know what? He didn't seem to. I remember when the royalties of The Unicorn came rolling in, he was living with two or three girls down in Cuba or someplace, or Key West, I guess. And he didn't even pick up his royalties for a year. So, mind you, he was working as a cartoonist for Playboy magazine.
How did you decide to do the song, The Unicorn?
Well, again, singing around the tables and doing that children's TV show, I was bloody sick of singing Puff the Magic Dragon, and I was always looking for new kids' material. I did Melveen Reynolds stuff,
yes.
And somebody said, have you ever heard of a poet for children? That's what this girl said, who writes, and there's a great little song called The Unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
I went to her house, and she gave me that Shel Silverstein album, and I took it home before the Rovers came out to join me. That's when I learned that song, and I was singing in the Pancake House, and I developed that song, and would you believe I still have a little red plastic see-through record that I recorded with a children's choir in Calgary, Alberta, singing the Unicorn song a year before I recorded it with the Irish Rovers.
I want to mention a little bit of trivia. There's a very famous guitarist that was your lead guitar player on the Unicorn, and the intro sounds similar to another recording that he had done with Burl Ives.
Yeah.
A little bit of tear.
That's right. Our producer, Bud Dant, who was Decca's main producer at the time, he did Ricky Nelson and like that. Bud was a golfing friend of Glenn Campbell's. Glenn was in the studio recording that morning, and he said, would you come into the Studio B and play with these Irish guys? And he came, nice, personable, young country boy. We joshed about his name, of course, being Scottish Campbell, you know.
We're going to listen to it right now. This is the record that made the Irish Rovers recording stars. Overnight successes? I don't know if we'd say overnight successes.
No, we had a lot of nights before the Unicorn came along. And who would have expected, in the midst of Rolling Stones and Beatle music and everything, who would have expected a whimsy little song like the Unicorn to come out of the blue and hit the charts? Quite amazing.
A long time ago when the earth was green, there was more kinds of animals than you'd ever seen. They'd run around free while the earth was being born, but the loveliest of them all was the unicorn. There was green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, the loveliest of all was the unicorn. Now God seen some sinning, and it gave him pain. And he says, stand back, I'm going to make it rain. He says, hey, brother Noah, I'll tell you what to do. Build me a floating zoo, and take some of them green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget my unicorn. Old Noah was there to answer the call. He finished up making the ark just as the rain started falling. He marched in the animals two by two, and he called out as they went through, hey Lord, I got you green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but Lord, I'm so forlorn, I just can't see no unicorn. Then Noah looked out through the driving rain. Them unicorns were hiding, playing silly games, kicking and splashing while the rain was pouring. Oh, them silly unicorns. It was green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees. Noah cried, close the door, cause the rain is pouring, and we just can't wait for no unicorn. The ark started moving, it drifted with the tide. Them unicorns looked up from the rocks and they cried, and the waters came down and sort of floated them away. And that's why you never seen a unicorn to this very day. You'll see
green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, You're never gonna see no unicorn.
I understand that the flip side of the unicorn was Black Velvet Band.
And it became a big hit in Australia.
That's correct, and that's one of the best pub songs ever, because no matter where we've taken that song in the world, Australia, which is really what the song is about, the poor young innocent Irish convicts that went to Australia to be shipped down there, that song is about shipping off to Van Diemen's Land, which was on Tasmania. I used to tell the story, I said, the first time I went to Australia, the immigration officer said to me, "Have you got a criminal record?" I said, "I didn't know you still needed one."
Her eyes, they shone like a diamond. You'd think she was queen of the land. And her hair hung over her shoulders, tied up with a black velvet band.
In a neat little town they call Belfast, apprentice to trade I was bound. And many an hour sweet happiness I spent in that neat little town, till bad misfortune came o'er me that caused me to stray from the land. Far away from me friends and relations, they follow the black velvet band.
Her eyes they shone like the diamond. You'd think she was queen of the land. And her hair hung over her shoulders, tied up with a black velvet band.
Well, I went out strolling one evening, not meaning to go very far, when I met with a picklesome damsel. She was selling her trade in the bar. When I watched, she took from a customer and slipped it right into my hand. Then the law came and put me in prison. Bad luck to her black velvet band.
Her eyes, they shone like a diamond. You'd think she was queen of the land. And her hair hung over her shoulder, tied up with a black velvet band.
Next morning before judge and jury, for trial I had to appear. Then the judge, he said, "My young fellow, the case against you is quite clear. And 7 long years is your sentence. You're going to Van Diemen's Land, far away from your friends and relations. They follow the black velvet band.
Her eyes, it shone like a diamond. You'd think she was queen of the land. And her hair hung over her shoulders, tied up with a black velvet band.
Warden by me, and whenever you're out on the liquor, me lad, beware of the pretty Colleen, for they'll fill you with whiskey and porter till you are not able to stand. And the very next thing that you know, me lad, you've landed in Van Diemen's Land.
Her eyes, they shone like the diamond. You think she was queen of the land. And her hair hung over her shoulders, tied up with a black velvet band. Her eyes, they shone like the diamond. You think she was queen of the land. And her hair hung over her shoulders, tied up with a black velvet band.
I'm Ronnie Allen, and I am so thrilled to be, I'm pinching myself to making sure that this is happening. Yes, it is happening.
Oh, great.
I am talking to Will Miller, and we are going to now talk about a song with a different lead singer. This is
Jimmy Ferguson,
The Orange and the Green.
Well, you know, it was just the beginning of the troubles in Northern Ireland when we came out to play in California and all. By 1968, those civil unrests were happening in Northern Ireland and nobody knew what was going to be happening in the future, but everyone thinks, well, it's between Catholic and Protestant. So, of course, the Catholics in the Republic of Ireland was always green, the Emerald Isle, and then the Orange men in the north of Ireland were Protestants. So my father, he was orange, and my mother, she was green. The great, eternal, horrible triangle of Northern Ireland.
Right.
And it was a fun song, and everybody liked it. When you can laugh at the problems, you can't laugh at the world's problems today, but at the beginning of all that problem, we could kind of laugh at the stupidity of people hating each other because of religion or whatever.
Oh, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. My father, he was orange, and my mother, she was green.
Oh, my father was an Ulster man, Protestant was he. My mother was a Catholic girl from County Cork, was she. They were married in two churches, lived happily enough, until the day that I was born and things got rather tough.
Oh, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. My father, he was orange, and my mother, she was green.
Baptized by Father Riley, I was rushed away by car to be made a little orange man, me father's shining star. I was christened David Anthony, but still in spite of that, to my father I was William, while my mother called me Pat.
Oh, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. My father, he was orange, and my mother, she was green.
With mother every Sunday, to Mass I'd proudly stroll. Then after that, the Orange Lodge would try to save my soul. For both I tried to claim me, but I was smart because I'd play the flute or play the harp, depending where I was.
Oh, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. My father, he was orange, and my mother, she was green.
One day, me ma's relations came round to visit me, just as my father's kinfolk were all sitting down to tea. We tried to smooth things over, but they all began to fight, and me being strictly neutral, I bashed everyone in sight.
Oh, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. My father, he was orange, and my mother, she was green.
Now my parents never could agree about my time of school. My learning was undone at home, that's why I'm such a fool. They both passed on, God rest them, but left me caught between that awful colour problem of the orange and the green.
Oh, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. My father, he was orange, and my mother, she was green. Yes, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. My father, he was green.
Now we're going to get to one of my favorites. This was actually the follow-up single to The Unicorn, Whiskey on a Sunday. And I did some research on this. I found out it was about a guy named Seth Davy, a real Englishman who lived around the turn of the century, 1902. In the song, you're talking about this guy. He has this puppet show that he's doing.
Yeah, Seth Davy was a real character. The Irish flocked over to England. Like they always said, Liverpool was the capital of Ireland. When we found this song, it was called Seth Davy, but we call it on stage Whiskey on a Sunday. Come day, go day, wishing me heart it was Sunday, drinking buttermilk through the week, whiskey on a Sunday. So that was right up our alley. And the interesting thing about it, at that time, California and part of the states were trying to change their liquor laws. And so Decca Records, the head people say, no, no, you can't call a song Whiskey on a Sunday. Because I think they were actually trying to pass the fact of opening bars and things on a Sunday.
Right.
And they thought it would be more like a political message. But in the end, they called the album the Puppet Song.
Right.
Not Whiskey on a Sunday at all. And I was kind of put off with that. I said, that's pretty lame, calling it a puppet song. And they actually took us into a Hollywood studio and dressed us up in Victorian clothes, and they had these giant puppets dancing around. And I look at that early video. We were way ahead of the game. Before music videos came out, we actually did a music video with that song, and oh my God, is it corny.
Now, one question that I have, I don't quite understand, why do they drink buttermilk through the week and whiskey on a Sunday?
Well, I guess when you're poor, the cost of a shot of whiskey is just too much for a working man. So longingly, he will sup down a glass of buttermilk, which is ready available, and long for Sunday to come when he had that one day off work, because in those days, they'd work 6 days a week. So Sunday, they'd put their best Sunday suit on, maybe go to church or mass, and then immediately head down to the local pub and have their one shot of whiskey a day. So you can imagine a working man longing, drinking buttermilk through the week. Yuck, whiskey on a Sunday.
Come day, go day, wishing me hard it was Sunday, drinking buttermilk through the week.
On the corner of Old Beggar's Bush, on top of an old packing crate, he has three wooden dolls that can dance and can sing, and he croons with a smile on his face.
Come day, go day, wishing me hard it was Sunday, drinking buttermilk through the week, whiskey on a Sunday.
Tired old hands tug away at the strings, and the puppets they dance up and down. A far better show than you ever would see in the fanciest theater in town.
Come day, go day, wishing me hard it was Sunday, drinking buttermilk through the week, whiskey on a Sunday.
To relate that old sad Davy died in 1904. The three wooden dolls in the dustbin were laid, his songs will be heard nevermore.
Come day, go day, wishing me hard it was Sunday, drinking buttermilk through the week, whiskey on a Sunday.
Stormy night when you're passing that way, winds blowing up from the sea, you'll still hear the song of old sad Davy as he croons, dancing all three.
Come day, go day, wishing me hard it was Sunday, drinking buttermilk through the week, whiskey on a Sunday. Come day, go day, wishing me hard it was Sunday, drinking buttermilk through the week, whiskey on a Sunday.
Now this next one kind of reminds me a little bit of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. That was the reindeer that everybody made fun of. But in the end, he was the reindeer that could. You know what I'm going to talk about, the biplane.
Yeah.
Evermore.
Well, you know, a good friend of ours who lived in Southern California and wrote a lot of country songs, actually wrote a few hits. His name was Marty Cooper. And Marty became a good friend of ours, and he used to send us songs. And when I heard this little song about the biplane Evermore, there was a time when Air Canada pilots adopted this as their theme song.
Really?
Yeah. And that song became a kind of a hit in Japan, of all places.
Wow, I had no idea.
Who knows these things that happen?
Way out in London Airport, in hangar number 4, a lonely little biplane left whose name was Evermore. As working days were over, no more would he sail. Upon his wings above the clouds, flying the Royal Mail.
Bye, 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 plane, once upon a sky plane. Bye, bye, hush a bye, lullaby plane.
All the mighty jet planes would look down their nose. They'd laugh and say, oh, I'm so glad that I'm not one of those. And Evermore would shake away the teardrops from his wings, and dream of days when he again could do heroic things.
Bye, 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 plane, once upon a sky plane. bye-bye, hush-a-bye, lullaby, ring.
Then one day the fog and rain had closed the airport down, and all the mighty jet planes were helpless on the ground. When a call came to the airport for a mercy flight, it would be too late, they could not wait, someone must fly tonight. And he rolled the little biplane out to runway number 5, and though he looked so small and weak, he knew he could survive. And as they rose into the storm, the jets hung their wings, and they hoped someday like evermore to do heroic things.
Bye, 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 plane, once upon a sky plane. Bye, bye, hush, goodbye, lullaby, plane.
I saw me baby bundle, I have spun a tale for you. You must learn there's nothing in this world that you can't do. Ah, do not be discouraged by circumstance or size. Remember evermore and set your sights up in the skies.
Bye, 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 plane, once upon a sky plane. Bye, bye, hush, goodbye, lullaby, plane.
That was the biplane Evermore. In terms of the similarity to that very well-known Christmas song, it was kind of like a Rudolph the Red-Nosed Plane Deer recording. I'm just waiting for the laughter to die down. Here's a song that I remember hearing by a group called The Scaffold, and I believe that it was Paul McCartney's brother, Mike McGear. I think he was doing the lead singing on their version. Lily the Pink. Now,
and you know, the funny thing is, I recently found in an antique shop an old medicine bottle titled Lydia E. Pinkham's Medicinal Compound for Women, Most Efficacious in Every Case. It says it right on the bottle. I was quite impressed. I said, Jesus, there was a real woman called Lydia E. Pinkham, and that's what Lily the Pink was born out of.
Changed
and all the horrible lyrics. Things it would do to you.
You changed some of the lyrics. You didn't do
well,
it exactly.
Well, we did. I always rewrote some of the lyrics because it didn't quite fit with what we were doing in America. So, yeah, I rewrote it a little bit.
Now here's a story, a little bit gory, a little bit happy, a little bit sad, of Lily the Pink and her medicinal compound, and how it drove her to the bath. Well, Ebenezer thought he was Julius Caesar, so they put him in a home, and then they gave him medicinal compound, and now he's emperor of Rome. Could hardly say a word, and so they gave him medicinal compounds, and now he's seen but never heard.
Medicinal compound.
Now he wears only half a pound.
Lily died and went up to heaven. All the church bells they did ring. She took with her medicinal compound.
Hark the herald angels sing.
Never really caught on for us over in America the way some of the other Irishy songs did.
That may be so, Will, but it's still a very entertaining record. Now, I know you have something to say regarding your progression.
Now that I'm listening to these old songs that you're playing, yeah, it's funny how we had to progress as well into a more traditional Irish stuff, because that whimsy was great in those 60 days, but later on we had to start getting into a little bit more real Irish stuff, you know?
Now we go to My Old Man's a Dustman, and you kind of explain what a dustman is. It's a garbage man, I believe.
Well, yeah, a trash wrangler, bin man, garbage collector.
I remember first hearing this song, and I don't know if he was really the first one to do it, but Lonnie Donegan is the one I remember.
Oh, he was definitely the first man to do it. My hero. He was the one that I just got so turned on about, having a guitar and listening to skiffle music in those early days. Even before the Beatles started, Lonnie Donegan was like the superstar of England and, of course, Northern Ireland.
Yes.
And I was playing skiffle music before anything. I was playing the Rock Island Line and Cumberland Gap and all those things.
Yes.
And so whenever we got our big TV show, it was a national show across Canada, they were asking me, well, what guests would you like on the show? And one of the first ones I said, Lonnie Donegan. So I went and picked him up at the airport, and I went down on my knee and kissed his ring.
One of my heroes as well. I loved his music. One of the biggest records he had in this country, along with Rock Island Line, was Does Your Chewing Gum Lose Its Flavor?
Oh, the chewing gum. That's right. We did that one as well. So when Lonnie came out to be a guest on our TV show, it was so exciting for me, and we did all those songs, and we knew every one of them, so it was great. We played with him on it. Some of the old TV shows are up on YouTube, and I think maybe the one with Lonnie's on there.
All right, we're going to listen to the Irish Rovers version right now of My Old Man's a Dustman.
If you were going to sing this little song, you would probably sing My Old Man is a Garbage Collector. So we're going to sing My Old Man is a Dustman. He wears a dustman's hat. He wears corblimey trousers, and he lives in a council flat.
Lovely, Willie. That was beautiful. Now here's a little story. To tell it is a must. About an unsung hero who moves away your dust
and garbage.
Some people make a fortune, others make a mint, but my old man don't earn that much. In fact, he's Philippine skint.
Oh, my old man's a dustman. He wears a dustman's hat. He wears cross-limey trousers, and he lives till he comes home flat. He loves to proper Nana, his great big mountain boots. He has such a job to pull them up that he calls them Daisy Roots.
Now folks give tips at Christmas, and some of them forget. So when he picks their mint up, he spills some on the step. Now one old man got nasty, and to the council rode. Next time my old man went round there, he punched him up the throat.
My old man's a dustman, he wears a dustman's hat. He wears cross-limey trousers, and he lives in a council flat.
One day whilst in a hurry, he missed the lady's bin. He hadn't gone but a few yards when she chased after him. She cried out to him loudly, in a voice right from the arm.
up on the cart.
My old man's a dustman, he wears a dustman sack. He wears a diamond trousers, and he lives in a coat so flat. Now my old man's a dustman, he's got an honor
code.
Now he got married recently, though he's 86 years old.
86?
We said, here, hang on, Dad, you're getting past your prime. He said, oh, when you reach my age, it's just to pass the time. My old man's a dustman, he wears a dustman sack. He wears a diamond trouser, and he lives in a coco flat. He found a tiger's head one day, nailed a piece of wood. The tiger looked quite miserable, but I suppose he should. Just there from out the window, a voice was heard to wail.
Here, where's me tiger's head?
For good from his tail!
My old man's a dustman, he wears a dustman sack. He wears a diamond trouser, and he lives in a coco flat. Next time you see a dustman, a living or pale and sad,
my old man's a dustman. I love that one. Well, back in the late 50s, around the time that Tom Dooley was on the chart, remember? Hang down your head, Tom Dooley. I spent a most enjoyable evening at the Berkshire Music Barn in Lenox, Massachusetts. The headliners were the Kingston Trio. And I remember that one of the songs that they did got a rousing reception. It was called New York Girls. A very catchy song. I had no idea until a couple of days ago, Will, that your group also did that song.
Yeah, that was a great lively thing. We used to do a lot of playing in New York to the New York Irish. There are millions of them out there.
Yes.
And that was a great sea shanty that I picked up somewhere along the way, and it was a good song, yeah.
Away, you shanty, my dear Annie. Oh, you New York girls can dance the polka.
As I went down the Broadway one morning in July, a Yankee maid, she asked me trade in a Sailor Johnson's eye.
And away, you Sandy, my dear Annie. Oh, you New York girls, can't you dance the polka?
To Tiffany's I took her, I didn't mind expense. I bought her two gold earrings and they cost me 18 pence.
And away, you Sandy, my dear Annie. Oh, you New York girls,
when we reached her cottage door, this to me to say. She said, my lover, he's a Yankee, with his hair cut short behind. He wears a pair of lousy boots and he sails on the black ball line.
And away, yes, Sandy, my dear Annie. Oh, you New York girls, can't you dance the polka?
He's homeward bound this evening, crackin' on your way. I kissed her hard and proper before her flash van came, saying, fare you well, you Barry girl, I know your little game.
And away, yes, Sandy, my dear Annie. Oh, you New York girls, can't you dance the polka? I wrapped me glad rag from me and to the docks it's dear. I've never courted another girl, I sipped her rum and beer. And away, yes, Sandy, my dear Annie.
Wow, and what a performance by one of the newer members of the Irish Rovers, Wilsil McDowell.
Yeah, and you can hear Wilsil's accordion playing in there. He could really play that box. Yeah. When I listened to him playing those licks on the accordion, boy, I said he really knew how to play.
The next one I'm going to play is Rhymes and Reasons. I know that John Denver wrote the song. I had heard a rumor he might have actually written Rhymes and Reasons for your group.
Yes, because the album that we were going to be doing in New York, the first time away from Bud Dant, Decca signed us up to do an album with Milt Oaken. Now, Milt Oaken was John Denver's guru and producer and everything else, and I think he was a partner with Tom Paxton in Cherry Lane Music and everything else. And so whenever we came to do the album in New York studio for Decca, by that time it was MCA, Bill asked John if he would get us a song and if he'd come and play that big 12-string of his with us. John Denver had just left Chad Mitchell Trio at that time. I didn't really know too much about him. He wasn't as famous as he was going to become. John Denver, the Irish Rovers, and Peter, Paul, and Mary did a pilot television show at the Cellar Door Folk Club in Washington, and they televised it with the hopes that it was going to become a television show. And John Denver was the host of that show. And I always said, man, that would have been a great show, but it never happened. That's how we really first met John Denver. And then he came in, a happy, smiling young fellow, came and played that guitar and gave us that song, Rhymes and Reasons. And I got a feeling he actually even sung harmony in the chorus of the song. I can't quite remember, but I know he played on it with us. And it was a good song. Perfect.
For the children and the flowers are my sisters and my brothers. Their laughter and their loveliness would clear a cloudy day. Like the music of the mountains and the colors of the rainbow, they're a promise of the future and a blessing for today. So you speak to me of sadness and the coming of the winter. Fear that is within you now, but seems to never end. And the dreams that have escaped you, and a hope that you've forgotten. And you tell me that you need me now, and you want to be my friend. And you wonder where we're going, where's the rhyme and where's the reason, and that you cannot accept. It is here we must begin to seek the wisdom of the children. And the graceful way of flowers in the wind.
For the children and the flowers are my sisters and my brothers. Their laughter and their loveliness would fear a cloudy day. Like the music of the mountains and the colors of the rainbow, they're a promise of the future and a blessing for today.
Towers fall around us. The sun is slowly fading, and it's colder than the sea. It is written from the deserts to the mountains they shall lead us, by the hand and by the heart, and they will comfort you and me. In their innocence and trusting, they will teach us to be free.
For the children and the flowers are my sisters and my brothers. Their laughter and their loveliness would fear a cloudy day. And the song that I am singing is the prayer to non-believers. Come and stand beside us, we can find a better way.
Did a recording of Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer.
Yes, another quite famous producer worked with us later on, Jack Richardson's his name. Jack brought that song to us. I thought we had an original. I didn't even know for a while that those guys out of Nashville who wrote it recorded it, but we got the hit with it in Canada. So every Christmas, when I have to listen Christmas after Christmas to Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer.
Believe. She'd been drinking too much eggnog, and
we begged her not to go. But she'd left her medication, so she stumbled out the door into the snow. When they found her Christmas morning at the scene of the attack, there were footprints on her forehead and incriminating claws. Send them back. Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe. Now the goose is on the table and the pudding made of pig and a blue and silver. Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe. Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing.
Elmo and Patsy did that song, and so did the Irish Rovers. And that's a great version of it as well.
Now, here is the most unusual, in many ways, hit that the Irish Rovers ever had. In fact, you weren't even the Irish Rovers. You dropped the Irish part.
And did a song that was written by Tom Paxton called Wasn't That a Party?
And I read that it was inspired by some of the parties that you
and the other Irish Rovers
had. Is that true?
Yes.
Wasn't that a party?
Well, it's very true. We were playing, I think it was Painter's Mills somewhere in Illinois. I forget where Painter's Mills was, somewhere out there. And Tom Paxton was on the bill with us. Tom would open the show. Mm-hmm. The Rovers would finish it. We were 1 week there. And at the last night, I've got a cassette of Tom saying, well, I've been partying with the Irish Rovers all week, and I've written this song, and I hope they take it to make a hit with it. So we did.
Oh, you did.
And I had that lying around for a couple of years, and then Jack Richardson came to do a contemporary album because Attic Records in Toronto had the idea, look, let's find a few songs that aren't your real traditional Irish songs, and let's do more contemporary, because Jimmy always loves singing those kind of country bluesy kind of things. And I was kind of against it. I was one of the holdouts of it. I said, no. I said, we got a lot of fans as the Irish Rovers. But anyway, for a little while, they put that Wasn't That a Party out just as the Rovers. I actually heard a country station, the DJ was announcing, no, for all you folks, this is not the Irish Rovers. This is a new band called the Rovers. And I kind of laughed at that.
Was it the record label that said Drop Irish?
It was. It was Attic Records in Toronto. So we dressed up like country singers. I look at the album cover still, and there we are, and I'm in a buckskin shirt. And for a while, we became a kind of a crossover band. And
well, you
but
mean,
we had a lot of our old Irish Rover fans were saying, what, are you ashamed to be an Irish? Why did you drop the name? Anyway, the song became a hit, and it was really good for us. But in the end, I think maybe everybody realized, as Popeye said, I am what I am. We were Irish singers, you know, underneath it all.
Could have been the whiskey. Might have been the gin. Could have been the 3 or 4 6 pack. I don't know. But look at the mess I'm in. My head's like a football. I think I'm gonna die. Tell me, oh, my. I wasn't that hard. Someone took a grapefruit. Wore it like a hat. I saw someone under my kitchen table talking to my old dog cat. They were talking about a hockey. The cat was talking back. Along about then, everything went black. I wasn't that hardy. I'm sure it's just my memory playing tricks on me. But I think I saw my buddy cutting down my neighbor's tree. Could have been the whiskey.
Rock and roll song, actually, and I think...
Well, the way that rock and roll sax player and all was in there, yeah, why not?
You left the Irish Rovers what year?
95 was my first year away from them after 30-something years. It was a hard transition to make, quite truthfully. It was my idea at the beginning, and my poor wife and everybody was really against me. I'll tell you the truth. I just was getting so frustrated that the interest seemed to be waning with the whole band. And then my brother one day said to me, look, Will, we don't want to do all these new things you want to come up with. Let's just milk it. Mm-hmm. And nobody ever says to me, let's just milk it. Mm-hmm. I can't. Like, Riverdance was getting popular. I had ideas of having dancers on the show, and the boys didn't want to change. And that was one of the reasons, and it was becoming real dysfunctional. They were frustrated with me. I was frustrated with them. And I said, this was a happy band at one time, and it's not a happy band. And I think, Ronnie, it's an old story of bands that play a lifetime together. You can read it everywhere. The Everly Brothers,
yes.
Even that movie, The Commitments. I said, have you ever seen the last scene in The Commitments movie? That's us. I have no regrets about it at all. We had an incredible run. We opened 6 Irish bars across Canada. We were probably the most successful of all the Irish folk bands that came out. And maybe, as the Bible says, there's a time for all things under heaven. And, you know, underneath it all, Ronnie, I was getting so frustrated that I had no home life. I had 3 kids that were growing, and I was missing their growing. We were on tour more and more all the time. And these little kids knew their mother real well. And then I'd come home and they'd all gather around me and then I'd be off again shortly. My love of art and painting was always with me, even in the Rover days. I carried drawing stuff and colors with me. And I said, wouldn't it be wonderful just to stay home, build an art studio, and paint? I didn't think of it as a commercial venture at all or making money with it. But my poor little wife says, you know, you're used to a certain amount of money coming in all the time with the Irish Rovers were doing real well. After I said, okay, I'm going to become an artist, but then I started freaking out a little bit. So I formed a really good band that I called Rogues and Romancers. And we had a fabulous band, and that's the ones that are playing on that Music of Healing. There is a 2 or 3 albums and a video that we did, and we mostly played Australia and New Zealand. We were really good, and it was a great thing, but I realized there's only one Irish Rovers, and the name is what's important. You could put anybody on stage. As long as you have the name, that's the important thing. As my brother proves right now by having a group of bar singers, really, guys that just played bars most of their life.
He calls them the Irish Rovers?
And he calls them the Irish Rovers, and they're still popular. They still draw concert crowds and everything else, but they're nothing to do with the Irish Rovers. He's the only original guy left, really.
Well, I understand, Will, that you're very much focused on your paintings.
They're doing very well. As a matter of fact, I can't keep up with it. I've got 4 galleries. I've got 1 gallery in Ireland that has my work. I've got 2 well-known galleries in here in Western Canada and in British Columbia. Right at this minute, I've got a show hanging in Calgary, Alberta, home of the great Calgary Stampede, and I have a gallery there called Collector's Gallery. So over the last 10 years or so, my paintings have become more and more popular, and wow, I love this. As we're talking, Ronnie, I'm painting. I don't know if you know that or not.
I have no idea. This is what you've been doing?
I'm standing up. You're amazing. I'm touching up something as we're talking.
Well, that's fine, but I wouldn't want to keep you from your work. If people are interested in seeing your paintings, are they on any website?
They are. They're on my own, willmiller.ca.
willmillar.ca.
Yeah, all one word, .ca. And also, I think you can see them on YouTube, as a matter of fact.
Did you ever paint any unicorns?
I never did. Painted lots
of
horses,
idea, though. A lot of horses. I think you should paint a unicorn, just for me.
Maybe I better paint a unicorn, yeah.
Will, I got to tell you, I can't thank you enough.
You're a good man to talk to, Ronnie. You're very easy to talk to. You've done your homework, and it's always a pleasure. The hard part is when you talk to some interview person who knows absolutely nothing about you or the music. You know all about it, which is brilliant. Natural. It's like sitting around in a bar talking to somebody.
Bartender?
Yeah. As I always said at the end of our television shows, may you live as long as you want to, and may you want to as long as you live, and may you be half an hour in heaven before the old devil knows you're dead.
Wow. How do I follow that? Well, here's a good way. We're going to close with a song from the early days of the Irish Rovers. It's a great way to end the show because of the title, which is called Years May Come, Years May Go.
Believe it or not, there was a hit in France in French, and somebody translated it into English. And I said, it's perfect for us because, you know, the philosophy of life is you worry and worry and worry, and it's going to happen anyway. So you look back on it all and say, you know what? We did what we did, and years may come, years may go, and let's hope we've got a few more good ones still in the pocket yet.
Let's take a look behind and see what we can find. Last year has gone for everyone, passed with time. What happened to us then can't happen once again. And what's it now?
doubt. Life's sure to dish us out. We'll beat the Lord, and that is what life's all about. Whatever may come true, I'll head for me and you. Someday it all will be memories.
Years may come, many years still are here. They go, many years to pass. Some go fast, they belong to yesterday. Some go slow, still the memories last. Some are good stuff to last. Some are bad.
To Ronnie remembers the oldies, the 50s and 60s.
Well, that's the show. And I thank Will Miller so very much. Right now, I have a couple of bonus tracks. First, here's the Irish Rovers doing an Irish folk song about an emigrant from Ireland who goes to mine for gold in California during the California Gold Rush in 1849. The original title of the song was Mairsheen Durkin. The Irish Rovers changed the title and some of the lyrics. Here they are singing their very original rendition. Goodbye, Mrs. Durkin.
Goodbye, Mrs. Durkin, I'm sick and tired of working. No more I'll take the freebies, no longer I'll be poor. As sure as my name is Barney, I'm off to California. Instead of digging freebies, I'll be digging lumps of gold.
In the days that I was courting, I was never tired resorting to the alehouse and the playhouse and the other house besides. But I told my brother Seamus, I'll be off now and grow famous. And before the day I return again, I'll roam the whole world wide.
So it's goodbye, Mrs. Durkin. I'm sick and tired of working. No more I'll drink the freebies, no longer I'll be poor. But as sure as my name is Barney, I'm off to California. Instead of digging freebies, I'll be digging lumps of gold.
Well, I've courted girls in Blarney, in Antrim and Killarney, in Dublin and in Kerry, down to the Cove of Cork. But I'm tired of all this pleasure, so now I'll take my leisure, and the next time that you hear from me, I'll write you from New York.
So it's goodbye, Mrs. Durkin, I'm sick and tired of working. No more I'll leave the freebies, no longer I'll be poor. Well, sure as my name is Barney, I'm off to California. Instead of taking freebies, I'll be taking lumps of gold.
When I landed in America, I met a man named Burke. He told me if I stay a while, he'd surely find me work. But work he didn't find me, so there's nothing here to bind me. I'm bound for San Francisco in California. Yeah, da, da.
I'm now in San Francisco, and me fortune it is made. Made pockets loaded down with gold, I'll throw away me space. I'll get back to me right larin', spend me fortune never tarin'. I'll marry Queen Victoria, Mrs. Durkin, for the spite.
So it's goodbye, Mrs. Durkin, I'm sick and tired of working. No more I'll take the freebies, no longer I'll be poor. But sure as my name is Barney, I'm off to California. Instead of digging freebies, I'll be digging lumps of gold.
And finally, we have one that is not by the Irish Rovers. It's by Will and the group that he formed after leaving the Rovers. Here are Rogues and Romancers doing Music of Healing.
I
don't beat the drums, for they frighten the children. Don't sing me songs about winning, losing. Sit down beside me, our green fields are bleeding. Sing me the music of healing. Sing me a song about a lover returning. The darker the night, the nearer the morning. Sing me a song about a new day that's dawning. Sing me the music of healing.
Ah, the hearts of wonder, stronger than the guns of thunder. Even when we're torn asunder, love will come again.
Sometimes peace is like a hare in the cornfield. You know that she's there, but you can't put your arms round it. All you can do is to follow the footprints. Sing me the music of healing. I never knew I could be so contented to learn I was wrong after all of my roaming. I've learned to be hard, but I've learned how to tremble. Sing me the music of healing.
Ah, the hearts of wonder, stronger than the guns of thunder. Even when we're torn asunder, love will come again.
Somehow the cycle of vengeance keeps turning, till each other's sorrows and songs we start learning. Peace is the prize for all who are daring. Sing me the music of healing. Yet time is your friend, for it cures all your sorrows. But how can I wait for another tomorrow? One step today, and a thousand will follow. Sing me the music of healing.
Ah, thunder, stronger than the guns of thunder. Even when we're torn asunder, love will come again.
Again.